three that has been embodied. Let us transcend the boundaries of the elusive self, liberating from the superiority complex and the inferiority complex and the equality complex.
So I'm happy to see that Tampa Sangha is practicing loving kindness meditation. It just began.
Last week.
Good. Let me just say something about loving kindness practice, and that word they use in Pali is metta, M-E-T-T-A, but we can just call it loving kindness or friendship. And it can be done the way we did it tonight, which is almost like a prayer, you know, at the end of meditation for the well-being of everyone. And it can be done as a meditation practice on a daily basis, which I highly recommend that you incorporate along with your mindfulness of breath and body. Because loving kindness practice is essential. You know, if we want to kind of generally have a everyday practice for our lives that is useful in every situation and meaningful, it is the practice of loving kindness. And really, all the practices of mindfulness and non-self are all encapsulated in one's capacity to be with great equanimity, equality, to offer friendship to everyone. Everyone means everyone. And that really is loving kindness, we could say, is an attitude of the mind and heart that is natural to somebody who is awakened to their interdependent relationship with everything and everyone. Because we know when we live in selfishness, when we live in just caring about ourselves, unless we're really kind of disturbed, most of us want good things to happen to us. You know? Right? I mean, that's kind of our basic, you know, when we only concern ourselves, we want happiness to come to us, we want success to come to us, we want to be free of illness, we want people to like us, we want to be happy, right? So you can see that as the walls of separation and egocentricity begin to soften, one begins to develop that same attitude wider, right? Now again, it's interesting that it begins with thinking of ourselves and wishing good things for us. Because the truth is, many of us on an ongoing basis do not have that loving, kind, friendly relationship with ourselves. We are not our own best friend. We are not always watching out for our own well-being. You know, when I used to... you know, I have a therapeutic practice in my professional life, and I deal with people who had bad habits, you know, people who smoke and people who are alcoholic and drug addicts and prescription pill addicts and eating addicts and, you know, all the types of addicts that we have. So like you might say to a smoker, and they would tell you, you know, they've been smoking for 30, 40 years, and I'd say to them, well, do you encourage your children to smoke? Right? Oh, no, you know, no, it's a bad habit. I would never encourage. It's not good for them. Right? So can you see the disconnect, right? Well, and I'd say to them, well, why not? You know, well, because I love them. You know, be like, that's the first thing. Well, because I love them, you know. I love them, so I would never encourage them to do anything that was harmful for them, right? It's kind of like a no-brainer, right? And yet, when it often came to themselves, the kind of choices they made in their life in terms of what they ingested or how they spent their time and, you know, even if you think about relationships, you know, well, what do you do in a relationship with somebody who treats you that way? Would you want your daughter or your son to be in a, or somebody you cared about to be in a relationship where you were abused or you weren't cherished or, you know what I'm saying? And you say, oh, of course not. I want, you know, I don't want that for my child. But yet you want that for yourself. So the practice of loving kindness, beginning with oneself, is not just simply a matter of saying the words. Words are easy. It's really having a regard towards oneself as if oneself was one's best friend, right? And you know when your best friend comes to you and asks for your advice, and if you really love and care about that person, you only want to give them what? Good advice. I mean, you want what's best for them. So the practice of loving kindness for oneself means that's the relationship you have with yourself. Okay? And then we learn through the practice to extend it out toward family, toward friends, toward colleagues, right? Neighbors. And then as you see, it goes out just to the people we run into during the day. Can we, no matter who they are, treat them as if they're our friend? You know, when you encounter someone in friendship, right? That's a wonderful place to encounter someone, isn't it? Right? I mean, when we encounter a good friend or a loved one, it's a happiness, isn't it? And we feel very comfortable and at ease, right? Well, the practice invites us to feel that same way and have that same attitude, not only to close friends and family, but even to people that in the past we were indifferent or neutral to. And then, of course, it even pushes us even further, right? Which is to begin to look at people that we differ from, people that we don't like, people who we believe have wronged us or wronged our loved ones, or etc. Also to see them as human beings, worthy of friendship and kindness. I got my hair cut yesterday. And I was talking to the woman who cuts my hair. She's Vietnamese, very interesting woman. Comes from real poverty, kind of worked her way up. But she says things to me when I get my hair cut, which isn't too often, that I find interesting. So yesterday, I was saying I need to get a haircut because I'm officiating at a wedding this weekend. Actually, many of you know Ella. Elsbieta, who is here, she's getting married this weekend. They've asked me to officiate at the wedding. So I don't know how we got in the conversation. I said that, and she's sort of talking about, I forget how she started talking about relationships. And then I was saying, oh, you know, relationships, or, you know, she's talking about people getting multiple, married 2, 3, 4 times, and saying, you know, how difficult it is, and oftentimes, especially for women, it seems like to find a man that is really good to them and true to them, and really cherishes them seems to be difficult. And she said, no, that's not true. I said, oh, she said, yeah. She said, yeah, she said, I could even take an evil man. A man who was evil. And make him good. I said, really? Yeah, she said, you just have to love somebody and always bring out the best in them. It was very interesting. I mean, it might be a little extreme, but I thought it was interesting. And she says, yeah, that's the way it is. She says, you know, again, I mean, she comes from a more traditional role, but she says, no, really saying, you know, I have the power to transform somebody because I'll always bring out the best in them. You know, I won't focus on their negative, I'll focus on encouraging and nurturing all the good things in them, and by being very loving to them, and et cetera. And I thought, oh, this, you know, right here in the barber's chair, I'm getting some good dharma. So it's like that, you know, the power of loving kindness, the power of generating friendship, wanting the best, encouraging the best, supporting the best, nurturing, nourishing all the good qualities in another human being. That is the practice of loving kindness. You know, Thich Nhat Hanh often talks about, you know, seeds, that we all have seeds in us, positive seeds, negative seeds. We have many, many different kinds of seeds in us. And that practice is about cultivating, nourishing all the positive seeds so they grow. Right? And either not cultivating, or at least not attending to all the negative ones, so they what? So they weaken. So oftentimes in relationships, we seem to often go on the assumption to expect all the good stuff and be kind of neutral to it, and to be more focused on the negative, right? And so we don't realize that what we're doing is encouraging or nurturing or reinforcing the negative, because that's what we're tending to. And we don't realize that often by just kind of ignoring a lot of that stuff and continually cultivating the positive in another person, nurturing them, and especially ourself being the example of how we want the other person to be. You know, the practice of dharma is also the practice of responsibility. You know, it is my job to be loving. And I hope the other person can be loving in return, right? But be that as it may, that doesn't stop me from being a loving presence. And perhaps my loving presence to the other person will begin to show them the way. So, anyhow, please see the practice of loving kindness, the practice of metta, not just as a kind of prayer thing or an affirmation thing, but something you really cultivate. In all your relationships. And since as lay people, that's what we do all day, right? we have relationships with people, we encounter people, we deal with people. So feeling your heart opening in that way and willing to be less standoffish, less walled off, less indifferent, and more actively offering friendship to everyone. Is the practice of loving kindness. And so the formulated prayer that Mary did so nicely tonight is just pointing us in that direction. Right? It's telling us how, just in a very natural and spontaneous way, we want to be with people throughout the day in our life. We won't be perfect, but we can change. And we can be aware when we are not dwelling in relationship with loving kindness, openness, friendship, and apologize and start over, begin anew. Before we get to the teaching tonight, let me just say something. Did everyone get information about the upcoming intensive that went out? I certainly encourage, not only the older people, but especially newer people. This intensive is really, for those of you who've been affected by Thich Nhat Hanh and all his very simple and accessible practices, this 12-week intensive is just going to focus on those practices. And they are practices that you don't need to go on retreat, you don't need to go anywhere, that you can very easily bring into your life, your daily life, your relationships, your emotional life, your community life. We're going to be using this book, Happiness, which is a new book by him, that in it has about 40 or 50 of the key practices that he's developed. And we're going to spend 12 weeks practicing them. So I encourage, if anybody's thinking about it, to do it. For those of you who kind of been looking for a chance to kind of step in, a lot of our intensives are longer. They're 6 months and they're kind of deeper. But this is a very accessible one, a very practical one, and I think it'll be an enjoyable one. We're calling it something like developing happiness and solidity in daily life. So I encourage you to think about it and to do it, like they say. So any questions about loving kindness or about the intensive? Or? Yes. Hi. Can everybody hear, David?
Okay. Just there's a friend that was in Tampa that developed a relationship with Tampa, and just noticed over time our personalities clash a lot, and I found myself really almost feeling aversion more than loving kindness, and so I found myself kind of this avoidance thing, finding ways to not hang out. And then, but every time we would sort of see each other again, everything was fine. It was just, we just somehow during the night, we'd get in a conversation and there'd be something that would rub me or something that she would disagree with. But again, every time we would meet up again, it was like nothing had happened. I think I never grew up with brothers and sisters, so I wasn't used to this sparring, being disagreed with a lot. And, I've just found over time that I see it as begin to appreciate it for that. You know that it's okay not to always agree with someone, and it doesn't mean that there's still not understanding. It's taken me a little while to realize that. Just thinking about being okay with being disagreed with.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good point, and I think your example, when you said, you know, that you didn't grow up with brothers and sisters, but because I think that's kind of what we're talking about, right? That when you do grow up with brothers and sisters, you know what? You often don't get along, but you still care about them, right? I mean, it's interesting, right? And there's a lot you just accept about them, even though, you know, there may be things about their personality, whatever, that rub you the wrong way, or if you had to choose a brother and sister, you know, if you had lots of choices, you might not have chosen them. But because, you know, it's not about choice, there's a lot of acceptance and a lot of caring, right? And I think what we're talking about is really that sort of mindset. You know, in a certain sense, a lot of the people that we run into in this life, we, you know, it's because of circumstance we run into them. And rather than fighting it and resisting it and struggling it, why not treat everyone like, oh, they're my brother and sister, or at least first cousins, right? I mean, if you saw everyone as your cousin, if you imagined like everybody in this room was a blood relationship, oh, you know? I mean, there could be somebody in this room that's a complete stranger to you, but if somehow you figured out you were related, all of a sudden there'd be what? Relationship. And all of a sudden your sense of connection to them would be different. Now, what's changed? Right? Nothing's changed other than you have a different idea about your relationship to that person. And all of a sudden, because you've changed that idea about your relationship to that person, all of a sudden there's this more interest or feeling of connection or more acceptance or more, you know what I'm saying? What's changed? Just our mindset has changed. So again, if we just acknowledge interconnection, right? We're all in this together. And that rather than being indifferent to that, or walled off from that, or rather than fighting with that, right? Why not enjoy it? Enjoy relationships. Enjoy everybody we come in contact with, including the UPS man, right? Including the people in the store, including the people we just, you know, see on the street. So anyhow, the practice of loving kindness is a good practice. Any other questions or before we get in? Yes.
Can you talk about wisdom?
Talk about wisdom. What do you want me to talk about?
I'm thinking about my neighbors. I have these horrible neighbors, and I'm trying to be compassionate, but they're frightening. So
yeah.
They're scared. So
they're scary to you?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, good. So, you know, so out here, you know, so we can say, I don't know, you know, I guess it depends where we live or whatever, but we could say, you know, 90% of the time we can be okay with people, right? Maybe even 95% of the time, you know. But yet, all right, so there's out here, there are those difficult people or those difficult situations or difficult relationships, right? In which some skillfulness, yeah, is needed, right? And again, part of that skillfulness is, you know, understanding your own capacity to deal with people like that, which I think is also, you know, we have to be, I mean, that's where our compassion toward ourselves comes in, right? I mean, you might say, gee, somebody else could probably help these people. Or somebody else a lot more skillful could probably figure out a way how to kind of turn them around, or you know what I'm saying? But that's not me. Right? And that's okay. You know, I mean, we can't be foolish, or we may get ourselves in trouble. Right? I remember when I used to work with adolescents, you know, especially ones that were severely, you know, just a lot of them wounded, had never really, as unfortunately many children or a significant number of children, grew up with really ever knowing love, never knowing an adult or somebody who really cares about them, who grown up hard, right? And so what became, you know, very clear is that many of these kind of young people, you just couldn't start out being kind to them because they saw kindness, they didn't understand kindness. They saw kindness as weakness. And they saw it just as something to manipulate. So it doesn't mean one doesn't try, but one has to be skillful. And the same way, one has to know how to set boundaries. Not only for your own integrity, but also for their integrity. Right? So, a lot of times when we set a boundary around the behavior of somebody else, it's not simply for us. It's also for them, because they don't see it. So when you say, no, you know, you can't do that to me. You can't say that to me. You can't act that way to me. Right? Or there will be, you know, and then if they continue to say there'll be consequences, that's compassionate for them. Because we want to reduce their suffering too. And a lot of people don't have a capacity to see when they're causing suffering for others and themselves. And so it doesn't mean, in Buddhist teaching, many of the Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, have peaceful and then they have wrathful aspects. You maybe have seen this in some of the Buddhist tantric paintings, where you'll see these wrathful deities. You know, have you ever seen pictures of them? You know, they're got crowns of skulls, and they wear bone necklaces. You know what I mean? They got horrible faces, and they drink blood. You know, those kind of creatures. Well, and then you read that these are wrathful aspects of enlightened beings. And you go, what's that about? Well, what that is about is just what we're talking about. You know, some people, when you are loving to them, when you are kind to them, when you are soft and sweet and caring, that brings out the best in them. And that really is very healing and transformative. But as you say, there are some people who just don't get that. Right? So you got to kind of... give them that eye, you know, the eye. You got to give them the look. Lets them know they've gone too far. And it has to stop right now. Right? And again, the key is you can deliver that kind of message, but it doesn't have to be in hatred. It doesn't have to be in anger. Right? It can be really with a very open, loving heart, because you're doing it not for you, you're doing it because you know that that's what they need. Right? You know, that's called tough love. Right? People, you know, with people and family, you know, tough love, you know. Tough love is an interesting word, isn't it? Because the word love is in there. It's just acknowledging that love sometimes can be very soft and gentle and nurturing. And sometimes it's just got to be, you know, right on. Right? It's got to be very definitive. Again, not because of me, but because I want to do what's best for you, that person I'm trying to help. Right? And so it's really an exercise in compassion, but that also has wisdom. You know, I understand that if I want to help this person, just, you know, being soft and loving and supportive and kind doesn't help them, because they don't get it. Right? And so I got to help them in some other way. But it's the same loving impulse to be of help and to alleviate their suffering and to help them wake up. Is that? Good luck with your neighbors. You know, it's a crazy world. I mean, there are all kinds of people in this world. Right? That's just the way it is, isn't it? And we have to learn how to live in the world as it is. Right? And yet be compassionate, be loving, be wise, and be effective. Did you? Yes. Well, in this upcoming intensive, there are some interesting things like the peace treaty and beginning anew. I mean, there and deep listening and other things. Again, tough love is not. You know, when I used to do a lot of that kind of work, I mean, tough love is easy, right? Because it's because to practice tough love, like I guess what's the opposite of tough love?
Soft love.
Again, people find it hard because they make it about me, the person who's doing it. You see, like a lot of parents go, "Oh, I could," you know, especially when I used to do this kind of stuff, you know. I would say mothers more than fathers would have a difficulty with tough love. Because they would just say, you know, I'm a mother, you know, it's my child. I can't say no to him or her, or I can't be tough, or I can't set a limit, or I can't not, you know what I mean, all this stuff. But again, because if you listen to that, the person who's talking is talking all about themselves. But the issue is not you. The issue is your child. So this is why the practice of Dharma is, I think, very helpful, because we realize as long as we're making always the decisions from me, what I think is best or what I want, right? I'm always coming from the place of egocentricity, right? Selflessness means I am looking at that child and where they maybe are stuck in their life or struggling in their life, right? And I'm trying to come up with ways that are most helpful to them. Right? And so a good parent, is one who can play multiple roles based on the needs of the child at their time. Right? And some children, there are enough age diversity here to understand that, at certain stages, children need what? Lots of softness. But it seems these days that at a certain stage, a lot of children need that other one. Because of the nature of the world they're growing up in. And so many of the attitudes that they're learning in society and the peer culture and everything can be dangerous for them, harmful for them. And really interfere with really the development of their heart in a good way. And so as parents, we're often forced to play various kinds of roles for our children at different times. And again, it's easier to play these roles when we're not attached to being a certain way. And that's really in lots of relationships. Right? We want to be free that we can do what's best for the other person. But oftentimes, really, the choices we're making how to be in relationship is really about me. Right? What I want, what I need, what I think is right, what I think the other person, how the other person should be. And it sort of comes back to our talk earlier, right, about mindfulness. Leaving the shore of illusion behind. Well, if we have all kinds of ideas about what kind of parent I am, and what kind of parent I should be, and what kind of, my child, and all kind of illusions about, we don't see the reality, right? We want to come into reality. Why? So we can be skillful. That's all. You know, if we're dealing just with our projections, our ideas that we're putting on the other person, we don't see clearly. Right? But when we can get rid of all that and see the other person just as they are, you know, good, bad, high, low, dark, light, you know, the whole deal. Right? Now we have the capacity to be of help. It's just love. And sometimes it comes this way and sometimes it goes that way. But the heart is the same. In Buddhism, you know, the word karuna, which is often translated as compassion, it doesn't mean empathy. It means I am able of touching deeply the suffering of another, and I want to alleviate their suffering. It's not simply, you know, empathy. It's active. Right? You know, I want to alleviate the suffering of another person. Now, right away, you know, like coming to, what's your name?
Holly.
Holly's neighbors, they may not, you know, they may not be up for it. I mean, that's the wisdom piece, right? I mean, just to say, you know, I'm in touch with everyone's suffering and I want to alleviate their suffering, you know, I just don't go, you know, I just don't go around in the neighborhood knocking on doors, you know, inviting myself in to alleviate their suffering. I may, you know, it's not very smart, and they may not be very compassionate, right? But if one is in relationship to some degree with another human being who is suffering, and if there is some openness, right, then we do whatever we can to alleviate their suffering. It's not about me. Right? It's about them and their suffering. Which means I have to see deeply into them, who they are, and where they are in their life. So I know what really the next step for them is. It may not be what I think the next step should be. Right? Any other questions about tough love? Right, but again, you're right, that's the French, Thich Nhat Hanh often talks about that, but it's to suffer with, but again, the active principle of wanting, I mean, that gets us out of just being an empathic person and wanting to alleviate. Now, again, what you said is certainly true, that sometimes just to be present to another suffering, just to be with another person in their suffering, with kindness, with support, right? And just offering that is very helpful, right? Just that in and of itself. And I agree with you. I mean, oftentimes, you know, we can't always think, you know, I have to do something. right? Come up with some action plan to alleviate their suffering. But just again, just to be with them in their suffering and to offer them our support, which often just means our presence, is enough. And often we don't realize how beneficial that is. So again, you know, lots of different circumstances, right? Sometimes that's enough, and sometimes we're called upon to be, we have opportunities to be more active in alleviating the suffering of another. I mean, you know, all the things that people are struggling with these days, right? People struggling with addictions, people struggling with, you know, problems with their bodies and body images and problem with their eating and their consumption patterns and financial way they handle money. You know what I mean? I mean, there's lots of suffering people create dealing with each other. The way they communicate or don't communicate. You know what I mean? There's lots of suffering that we can be more actively helping in. I mean, and obviously the societal level, whether it's issues, you know, obviously issues of our environment, right? Et cetera, et cetera. You know, there are lots of issues in which a more active stance in terms of protecting, taking care of, and preventing suffering and injustice is also part of what bodhisattvas do. It's interesting, in the literature of the bodhisattva is a being like us who sees the purpose of their life is not only their own personal transformation, but also the alleviation of suffering. Bodhisattvas manifest in many different ways. It is said that bodhisattvas on the material level manifest as food for hungry people, people who are starving. Manifest as medicine for those who are ill. Manifest as water for those who are thirsty. So the alleviation of suffering at the material level, right? Helping somebody, right? In those very basic ways is a most definite attitude and action of compassion. So it can be very social, it can be very interpersonal, it can be very active, and it can also just be just a loving, open, warm heart that's extended to someone who's going through a hard time, right? Without offering any advice, without taking any action. You know, what don't we want to be? We don't want to be, I once heard a teacher, a person who was a teacher of spirituality or meditation, they really just had one teaching that they gave no matter what. And I remember when I went to hear this person, they said, you know, I'm a one-trick pony, they called themselves. You know? And I thought, yes, you are. I mean, you know, and the trouble with the one-trick pony is what? You only got one trick. I mean, and if that trick doesn't, you know, get you an audience, you're in trouble. Exactly right. You know, my sense as compassionate people, and I would imagine most of us here are here because we are compassionate people or want to be more compassionate people, as people who care about other people, as people who care about our world, and the sufferings and injustices and difficulties of it, in it. We don't want to be, you know, we want to have a large medicine bag, you know? That's another way. You know, you want to have just lots of different kinds of medicines and interventions in your bag, right? And so when this comes your way, you try this. But when this comes your way, you try that. And then you keep, you know, and if you try this and it doesn't work, then you try something else. But it's a compassion and skillfulness of compassion and action is very creative. You know? And it's a... I mean, I think it is... I'm sure you all agree, right? I mean, it actually is really one of the nicest, best things we do as human beings. Right? Wouldn't you say so, Heather? Yeah. I mean, you know, when we're with another human being and we're helpful to them and reaching out to them and, you know, make a difference, we feel what? Good. And it seems like a very meaningful kind of encounter. You know, a different qualitative level than, you know, doing our weekly shopping, let's say. Right? Or a lot of the other things we do in our life, you know, which are important and very much part of life. But we know when we have an opportunity of really connecting with another human being and really being helpful, right? And we feel we've really done something to alleviate someone's suffering, right? Help them in certain ways. There's a natural good feeling there, isn't there? That I think we all experience, that lets us know that somehow when we are acting and connecting to somebody in a loving and compassionate way and we're helpful, I think many of us often feel like, oh, right? This is what life's about. Right? Oh, yeah, this, because there's something about it that just feels so right, so good. You know what I mean? It's natural. And so it has, I think, acting in a compassionate way and helping in that way, there's just a natural feedback loop that we just feel good. And that should ring little bells to us about what is important in life and what is meaningful in life. I mean, I'm looking at Brian over here. Brian, how do you spend your day? What? Brian's out there at the airport. Anybody need a wheelchair? Right? Helping people on and helping people off and wheeling them around? Yeah. Do you enjoy helping people? Yeah, it's kind of nice, isn't it? Yeah, and I'm sure people are grateful. I'm sure some aren't, but you know. But that's the way it is, isn't it? Yeah, but it's... right? It feels nice to be of help. Any other questions about the practice of loving kindness and the practice of compassion and skillfulness? Yes.
Well, as many times in this wonderful space, I come in thinking that I have clarity, and then you stir things up, and there's dust, and there's all this stuff that comes up, and then you come back to something that started off talking about compassion. I was thinking, okay, so that loving kindness, compassion, empathy, sympathy, Fred's going to sit it all out on the table and be able to pick and choose what I want to do and how I want to do it, and I'll be right, and someone else will be wrong.
Yeah, good.
So at the end of this journey that you've taken us on, I've come to settle down and to feel that what you're saying is that compassion is many things.
Is what?
Many things.
Compassion.
In the sense that it's not okay, it's empathy with an action component, or it's this or that, and you can point to somebody and say, you're wearing the right t-shirt, you've got the compassion t-shirt on today. Yesterday you had the empathic t-shirt on, and you know, you're really watching, you have the one color and this kind of stuff. But it's really about being present with a person in whatever capacity you skillfully think you need to deal with that person. And then everything else just falls aside and it seems to be right.
Yeah, and it's like, I liked your words of journey. And, you know, that again, it's not a cookie cutter. Right? There are people like that, right? They're kind of, they're like always sweet. You know what I'm talking about? But it doesn't have a lot of depth to it. And it doesn't have a lot of skillfulness into it. And again, you know, that, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you know, it's good that they're, you know, it's better to be a nice person than a not nice person. But we're talking here something more than that. Right? We're talking about a real capacity to engage, you know, very personally and directly with life, whether it's another individual or a social problem or, you know what I mean, or whatever, but in a very, you know, where there's a lot of immediacy and directness and involvement and creativity. And you know, we don't have to know the outcome, right? It's a process. See, a lot of people hold back and they go, "Well, you know, I don't know if I'm going to say the right thing," right? You just do your best. If your heart is pure, you just do your best, right? And if it comes out not the way you expected, just you know, just apologize, do a quick retraction, you know, and maybe take a little time out and then start over. Right? You know, the thrust is, as a human being, right? Our attitude is, in all situations, right? Is, I want to be of help. Right? How can I be of help? And again, this is not like a neurotic kind of thing, or an obsessive, you know, I'm just kind of scanning the universe, you know, who can I help? Who can I help here? You know, you know what I'm saying? There's a lot of attachment. It's just more of an openness, right? You know, again, it was like, you know, it was said in the loving kindness in the Metta meditation, which is very common, which says, you know, it is the attitude of a parent to a child. Right? When a parent looks at their children, their attitude is what? Any parents here? Their attitude is what? Love. And when you love your children, you're always looking what? How are they doing? Right? If you're happy, if they're happy, you're happy for them. And if they're suffering, your attitude is what? How can I help them? Right? I mean, it's simple. Right? And that's why we say, you know, we take joy in the joy of others. When people are happy, we're joyful. And when they're suffering, we want to help them. If we can, you know, if we can. Should always add that in parentheses, if we can. And then life is very simple. We just go through a life, all our, you know, we may be working here, we may be in school there, our life may put us here or there in all different situations, but that's just the story, right? It's changing. The situation is changing. But the attitude of our heart, mind, is always the same. Right? We generate loving kindness, right? We generate compassion. In our interventions, we do our best to be skillful, present, mindful. Right? It doesn't matter, you know, what our job is, where we are, where we're not. We're not that different at work and at home. Because our attitude is always the same. When we come home, it's the same thing. Right? If people are happy, then I'm happy. And if people are going through a hard time, it's my response is what? How can I be of help? Same way, you know, at work or out in the street or friends, out and about. So when you develop a deeper practice, when I say a deeper practice, it means that these things are no longer just practices, but they just become part of you. It just becomes kind of simple, You think it's this simple? Yeah. It really is. Again, you know, we have to keep our eyes on what's really important in this life, what's really of value, what's really of meaning, no matter where we are. And then it becomes simple, and we don't get sidetracked. Thank you. So when I come back in 2 weeks, we'll get into Zen, the essence of Zen. But we got into some good essence tonight. And again, I certainly encourage a lot of what we're talking about tonight is actually addressed. I'm not trying to push the intensive, but I just think it'd be an opportunity for people. The bell, John.